Barnabas and Paul and John Mark. Okay, so if you have your Bibles, turn to the second half of Acts 15. Okay, let's see. So let's see, it's 36 and 36. Paul doesn't want to take John Mark in and Barnabas does. Okay. And a result, they split their ministry and they go different ways. Okay, now what we're gonna do is your thoughts on this, because this is one of the results in terms of when Christians disagree on things. This is the divide and go your separate way one. And if there's any guidance or observations you can make, this is the, you know, why don't we share your thoughts on this. Okay, anyone have thoughts on Acts 15, 36 at the end of the chapter?
So in this disagreement, although they disagreed and they went their separate ways, did they ever come back again together and say, of course, we can't know? Would it be assumed that once they got back together again, they would say, okay, would say, I'm sorry. I don't know why I disagree with you in the first place, but now I understand. There was no conclusion of whether or not they reconciled.
Yeah, whatever happened to these people.
Yeah.
Now, does anyone know, like, possibilities of whatever happened to John Mark and Paul?
Then Paul, later on, as he was nearing the end of his life, commended John Mark at one point, right?
Yeah. It's in, I'm going to look for it. I think it's in 2 Timothy 4, uh, 11, but it doesn't say John Mark, it says Mark. It says, okay. 2 Timothy 4:11, only Luke is with me, pick up Mark and bring him with you, for he is useful to me for service. Sure. And so there lies a mention of Mark. The only problem is, here it is, it's a real common name.
Oh, okay.
It's like James. Well, which one you're talking about, you know? And so it could be, and then you look at church fathers and like people that there's this guy Mark, and you know, maybe it's like the first bishop. And so this is where you look at some early church fathers, the generation after the apostles, they write certain things, because Mark does reappear as a name, and Paul says he's very useful to me, also mentions that in Book of Philemon, chapter 24. Some also think that he writes the Gospel of Mark too.
Right.
And the reason that being is that whoever this Mark is not named one of the apostles. So there's no like Apostle Mark, you know. So right. he got the information from somebody. And according to Acts, Peter knows John Mark's mother. She showed hospitality to him. And so this, historically, they make a link between Peter and Mark because he has to know things that occurred and he wasn't there. So so this is where he gets the authority to write it, because an apostle was telling him things and he was writing it. And so if it's true that that's who this, it's the same Mark, even though there is no, let's say, official reconciliation, whether a reconciliation is needed, it's something that we have to, you know, talk about. There is evidence that Mark becomes a huge figure in later on. Yes, Gene.
Jeff?
Yes. Who's that? I see Frank.
Yeah.
Frank and then Gene. Yeah.
Okay. So from this standpoint, there's a sharp disagreement. But what is it over? It's not over doctrine. It's not over any theological issue. It's really a much more pragmatic situation, and one in which individuals might have different perspectives. So this seems to me to be unalarming, I guess, is what I would say, even though there was a close relationship between the two leaders.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, Gene, you have your hand up.
Yes, I think I go along with what Frank said, but I'm looking at a little different slant. I don't have a problem with Christians disagreeing, even about very important things. To me, the critical issue is how do they disagree? Is it friendly, mutually affirming disagreement, or is it very angry, ugly, kicking the other person out and condemning them or whatever? I've seen both kinds, and I don't have a problem with disagreements. It's just the way that you handle them.
Okay, anyone else? Ben, did you have your, or just your hand?
No, I was probably doing some hand waving, but okay. I agree with the comments made. I'll just also note that this resulted in something positive. It meant there's two pairs of guys going out ministering instead of just the one.
Yeah, I mean, there's words where people, I try not to do psychology of people. You read in too much of it, and then rather than the words. But Barnabas, the son of encouragement, if there would be one that would probably take someone who perhaps, someone else rejected, it would be Barnabas, which may then play into giftedness and temperament matching up. So let's say then, the term that is used in Acts is that it's a very strong disagreement amongst them because they're a really good team, Paul and Barnabas. This, and I would agree with what other people said, this is the lightest of all the disagreements, okay? Because there's no theology involved in this. If there was theology, this would have gone into a different realm, and you would have, like Paul, like in the book of Galatians, you know? I mean, he just goes all over people who tried to add stuff to, the gospel. But he doesn't do that here. And so how you approach it theologically, personnel. Okay, have you ever experienced a time where people had different opinions upon ministry personnel? And it could be, and there lies, I'll tell you, disagreeing on ministry personnel, you might say it never happens. It should happen all the time. Because if you're not really assessing the situation, you're just being a real softy and, not really looking at it. This was the annual review, you see. This was the annual review. This was, what are we going to do? Where are we going to put the person? And it's part of the biblical process. Too often in the church, you hire people, you let people in volunteer ministry, you just let them go until they are so ineffective, it's like the ministry doesn't even move anymore, But we're too soft-hearted here. I think that the way they do it is something that the church needs to do. Okay. Yeah, if they do it, Gene, that's right. Have you ever seen a time when they just let it go and they're like too soft? And a time when Mary Rabbit, they did it and it turned out really well and the ministry flourished?
Hmm. So can you give us an example, like a disagreement between, total immersion versus sprinkling? Is that a good...
That's a different... We're not talking about people. We're now talking about people in ministry rather than like how you do ministry and things like that. Competency, whether they match up, this is what we're talking about.
How about women in ministry leadership?
No, we're not talking about that. That's a little bit more theological.
I was trying to get an example where it applies.
It's the wrong example, Tony.
How about music styles? The church that wants hymns versus contemporary music.
That's a little off too, because that's more not of, the people, a method. Though. The only thing that I would say about that, and maybe I have an example of this. I have this theory that with how music changes so quickly now, it's like in the old days, you'd have the same song for like 100 years, you know? Now it's every 10 years, there's different music, different style, you know? Like my daughter on Amazon Music brought up Taylor Swift's new folk album. So I listened to the folk music. I said, this reminds me of when I was growing up in the 60s and early 70s. I said, but no one listens to this anymore. No one listens to folk music anymore. You turn it off. It's like you fall asleep with folk music. And so what happens is that because music changes so much, any song leader that is represents the style of the moment in 10, 20 years is outdated. It's just the way it is. And it's almost to the point where you have to understand that unless the person adapts his music style or her music style, you say, oh, become ineffective. I think we need to get someone else because the music style no longer matches. And this might be one of these types of things. Music style, how you do music and things like that. Yeah, Garbo, you have your hand up?
Yeah, you were talking about ministry personnel, and I'm pretty active in BSF, and so I've seen issues with ministry personnel and whether somebody might work or not work, because you do, I think it's Inside Acts, they listed like certain characteristics to look in leadership, right? I can't remember what the characteristics are, but you know, something to do with filled with the Holy Spirit or something like that, to have the spirit of discernment. And those characteristics, I think, are necessary. But when it comes to, leadership and seeing how well somebody can lead, that is important. But I think there's more than that involved. And the reason I say that is because since I've been so active in BSF ministry and seeing leadership, you can kind of see the difference. And for example, like a group leader, not everybody is familiar with BSF, but so inside BSF, you have, different leaders. And one of the leaders, there's administrative leaders, which I'm one of those. There's group leaders. So everybody has a different function, but it makes a difference to have that spirit of discernment for sure. But you need a little extra in terms of a willingness to learn something new. For example, when we entered shelter in place and COVID, there are some BSF groups. BSF has different groups in different locations. And we have teaching leaders. Teaching leaders had to be willing to learn all this new technology. Otherwise, BSF is not going to happen. And we had 400 something women. So in our group, and there's different groups, different number of women, but they're kind of up there, right? So there were multiple groups, that during that time, when we had shelter in place and COVID in place, the teaching leader wasn't willing, and the group leaders were not willing to you know, learn all that stuff and do all that it took to have the ministry continue. And so there were groups that stopped, but we were one of the groups that didn't. And I felt like it was such a huge blessing because, I mean, we were able to, and it was hard work transitioning from like a meeting in place to doing everything on Zoom. I mean, there were so many things to figure out behind the scene to make it work. But, and you know, it took all of us to work together and everybody's willingness to do it. Because if one person is not willing to do it, things start to fall in the cracks. But I guess the point is, there has to be a willingness and kind of an ability to do it as well. Because ministry is so, it involves more, I guess it depends on what you do, but it involves more than just talking to people or, you know, like an in-person, I feel like there's more characteristics that are not listed in the Bible that, you know, ministry personnel have to have in order for a ministry to move forward. And COVID, I guess, is a good example.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I you might be talking about giftedness too.
Yeah. I don't.
And then like, there's the general one. You need to be a good guy, a good person, filled with the Spirit, wisdom. That's Acts 6. So that's general, like, general understanding. Then there's giftedness, what you're talking about, Barbo.
Okay.
And in Acts 15, it may have to do with past history, because Mark sort of like leaves the group earlier on. So that Paul remembers that. Paul remembers that. You abandon, you don't have what it takes, you know, type of thing. And then it's some interesting, there's a possibility that this Mark is a relative of Barnabas in some church writings. And if that's true, wow, a relative thing adds a lot of things in the mix. Maybe that's why Barnabas takes Mark in, you know. But all this plays in. And I think that, and this is where I want to go with this, is that in the modern era of Christianity, we tend to be too slack on this. We just tend to be too slack on it. And you don't want to be mean and stuff like that, but we tend to be too slack because we want to be the good guy. We don't want to. But at this level, Paul is not going to take John Mark, you know. And it's a sort of a personal, it's not a personal thing, is that I think Paul doesn't think that he's fit for the ministry of what they're going to do. It's not a good match. So let Barnabas take him to do something else, you know. It's like in our music ministry in San Francisco, I think I should have transitioned the music leadership style in San Francisco earlier because the leader was a keyboardist. And keyboardist is 80s. I don't know if you know electronic music, it was 80s with electric keyboards. That was the rage of pop music back then, you know, Berlin and you know, those the British, you know, with the big hair and stuff like that, the teased hair. And but in the 90s and moving into 2000, that sound was so dated. It had moved to alternative folk music into the 90s. And all music leader was very different, you know, the leader I had was a keyboardist, and it was dated, and it was no longer a match to where the music was going. And I think it's really difficult, you know, it's very difficult to make the change, but sometimes you have to do this as long as you're not mean spirited about it, you know. And but you do it by saying, look, it's the way the ministry is, you know. You're not a match for it.
So it's not a personality clash then. It's
Yes. You know, I think I see this in eldership all the time. Boy. Wow. And I've seen I've been in three different churches. I've seen three different sets of elders. You know, I'm not saying, you know, I'm not going to name names, but I haven't seen a church that had perfect elders, you know, and how, you know, just very, it's very, very interesting. But one in my other church in San Francisco that I pastored from 1990 to 2009, there was a time we had elders for life, which is similar to PBC. We had deacons for life, which is similar to PBC now. And that was like the death, man. Because you had people, deacons for life, elders for life, you know, after a while they forgot what they're doing, you know. But you couldn't, I want to use this phrase, you couldn't get rid of them because they're for life, you know. It's like, what are they doing, you know? And so we had this time where we'd say, oh, we should have terms. And we always have like this nice way, oh, they need a rest, right? It's the thing is, if you're going to assess, truly assess, you wouldn't need terms. But because the church doesn't assess, you need terms, like a certain period. So they naturally roll out of leadership because we don't have the heart to tell people, you know. And it's so interesting, this thing. And, you know, the more I think about it, the more I think that in Acts 15, in 36 on, it's very, very important that the church does it. And you find a blessing in terms of Mark flourishing, doing better, writing perhaps the first gospel in Mark, but it had to only occur. And to the point where if there is a division, you could tell in a strange way by what happens to all the characters in the division. And if everyone flourishes, then you know that that conflict was meant to be by God, and it was used in a way to further his kingdom. If one flourishes and the other just falls apart, is, I don't want to do it anymore, then you know this person is just like, Paul was right. This person is like not fit, you know. I mean, he made the right call. And so there are different ways that the thing can end out. But I'm making a push for assessment, an honest assessment too. Because what we do in assessments, in job reviews, it's not as good as what it could be.
So it's not completely objective. Is that what we're saying?
Well, there is some objectivity because Paul is using the history he has with John Mark. You know.
So it's not out of, it's in this sense, it's not Paul out of arrogance then.
No, I think he's a very principled person. He doesn't think that John Mark should go with him. You see, it's very different than, you know, Garbo brought up the deacons in Acts 6. And the deacons were chosen. Very interesting. The apostle says, oh, choose amongst yourselves.
Right.
Here's the opposite. No way I'm going to take this guy. Let's say they say, oh, we choose that you have to take John Mark. You have to take him. No way. No way. It's a sort of you understand these situations on some level. Whoever the congregation decides, it's okay with me. Okay with all of us. You can, if Paul wasn't there in Acts 6, if Peter says, oh, you choose Stephen, no way, you know, even though he said, you know, choose amongst yourself, then it's a personal thing. Then this guy's on an ego trip, you see. And so at different levels, there's how you decide. At this personal ministry level, where there'd just be like three of them, maybe, you there's much more discernment involved in this. Okay. So all of this is not to make a flow chart of how to do things. I used to want to do them. I hate them because you realize it's impossible, you know. They're just sort of themes to remember as you journey through life and you journey through ministry. And you just kind of remember. Steve, did you have your hand up?
Yeah, just observation. So I think Paul's well, it seems like Paul's objection or his reason for the, you know, not about John Mark is because back in Acts 13, right, Barnabas and Paul were in Antioch, and then John Mark left them, or something happened.
Something happened, 13, right? Yeah.
And just to note that Paul and Barnabas were chosen. They were the key partners. They were like leadership and prominent folks in the church. And so, I think that when you have a disagreement or division, as you said, there's sides, right? There's a fallout, which means people have to pick sides, right? You know, that's what happens, right? And I think one of the things is like, because they separate, maybe that was, we can't agree, but we should be separate. This way we won't divide the church. We divide ourselves, but we won't divide the church. And so, I mean, that might be one thing that's playing out in terms of dynamics. It's not just Paul and Barnabas.
Yeah.
It's actually the church.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. That's a very good observation and comment you made, Steve, because what happens is that the fallout between Barnabas and Paul isn't like, oh wow, let's start competing missionary organizations now, you know, and we'll go to the same place and we'll see who's right and who has the bigger church. Okay, I don't want to talk about the past, but a few blocks from PBC is Abundant Life, and when Paul Shepherd was disciplined at Abundant Life, he felt that he should be reinstituted much quicker than the church thought. So he got pastoral friends to then say, oh, Paul Shepherd is now fit for the ministry again. But the leaders didn't think it was time yet, right? So he starts another church right kind of near the original church, you know? It's like, and it's sort of like, and it takes people with him, you know? That's like, whoa. You see, that's what Steve says. They don't start competing. What we have now is, oh, okay, I'll start a competing church and we'll see what happens. And then you had the last one. Well, not the last one. The last one was Brian Lawrence. But after him was Herman Hamilton. The elders say, there's a fallout between Herman and the elders, leaders at Abundant Life. He starts another church, takes away another half of the church. And then Brian Lawrence becomes. And then he just says, this is not for me, you know. And after about 2-3 years, he says, I'm out of here, you know. And so you see then in real life, I always try to say, take the biblical principles, take what you know in real life, and then see if you can kind of learn real life situations from the theological biblical principles so that you can learn best practices and things you shouldn't do. So I'm thinking of Abundant Life. It's a very sad situation. What happened there, you know, with they starting up competing churches. I would tell people, you're going to leave a church, don't start one 2 blocks away. Looks really bad. Go to another city. Go to another state. Don't. Looks bad. That's an ego thing. You're not furthering the kingdom. Okay? Okay, yes, George.
When the disciples came to Jesus and said they are baptizing in the name of John.
Yes.
And Jesus said that, you know, let the kingdom be preached. What do you think about that disagreement?
Well, I gotta study that a little bit more. I can't say I'm an expert on that passage. They're baptizing in John in the book of Acts, right?
Right. Yeah.
And then they have to bestow the Spirit upon them, right? Things like that. They haven't learned the fullness of Christ yet in the baptism. You know, you have to, that isn't one of these things where, oh, we'll continue doing that. They have to tell them, you know, that's not where it's at now. Christ has come, the Spirit has been bestowed, you know. So that's one in which, as Frank would say, there's a theological concept behind it. And so they have to get these people up to speed with it. You know, so that's a training aspect in the book of Acts, rather than we go our separate ways aspect. Neither is it a condemnation aspect, though it could have been a condemnation aspect if later on in the epistles these same people are saying we're just proclaiming John the Baptist, you know. Then Paul would have said, oh, these people, you know, forget these people, you know, they don't represent the gospel. And so you see a progression in the severity of tone in which the early leadership used, where they are more civil at the beginning. And if the opposing theological group, if they find it's a very offensive theological concept, they get very harsh with them at the end. They pull no punches. I mean, the synagogue of Satan thing in the book of Revelation, if you don't think that's an insult, theological insult, you don't know what it is, you know. That is bad. But it begins in Acts 15. Why don't they call them synagogue of Satan of Acts 15? Yeah, because they're dialoguing in Acts 15. You see, they're embedded in Revelation, you see. So the tone is very different. And in Galatians, you could see that Galatians in between Acts 15 and the book of the Revelation, Paul is getting very firm in terms of this another gospel. If you follow this another gospel, but still not the derogatory tone in the book of the Revelation. It'll get bad. Okay. Any other questions? It's 9:54. Okay. So, we're going to end it for today because of the service is beginning. We're not meeting next week. So Garbo, you send an email.
Yes, I will do.
Pray
that
for me on, be preaching next Sunday on Habakkuk 3. Take care, everybody.
Thanks, Jeff.
Bye. Thank you.
Yes. Hey, Garbo.